nurse from Chicago Med, raped, beaten, perked towards the joint.
There's just too many similarities to a case that I worked 10 years back. I'm on the next plane to Chicago. Witnesses were consistent. They all saw a man in medical clothing.
What brings you to Chicago, Mr. Yates?
My job is a physician. There's always a spot to fill.
He's playing a game, and we'll get him.
Chicago PD!
He's just here.
Hello.
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name is Adam. I'm here in New York. I'm joined by Josh. It's been a really long time since last we spoke, Josh. How are things?
Things are pretty different.
Yeah, we've taken about a 5-minute break from the last episode that we just recorded because we're trying to get ahead again.
Yeah.
As I mentioned last week, I will likely be moving eventually, and Josh has mentioned that he might be taking a job soon, which will be pretty time consuming. So
yes,
both of us are trying to bank things when we can.
Yeah.
The way this podcast works, as soon as we sit down on our laurels for a second,
those laurels go right up our butts.
They sure do.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, great. Oh, I just edited an episode. And then it's like, no, you didn't. That was 2 weeks ago.
So my last two edits have fallen on weekends where I have had to go out of town.
Yeah.
And they've been very long episodes that I had to spend a lot of time editing, and I didn't finish them until midday on Monday.
Yeah.
I'm not happy about that. That's not how I like to roll. But I've got too much.
And you've had too much things going on, too, between moving and other things that it's...
Moving's really gumming up the works.
Yeah, it does that, right? Because it's hard to say, like, oh, I'll just put off moving a little bit to go sit down and look at Audacity for the next 6 hours.
or 15. So, yeah, it's been a little frustrating, generally.
I went on a little excursion with Max this morning,
but we talked about that last week.
And other than that, like for the last 2 days, my God, I feel like I've done nothing but watch this episode primarily. So I feel like
these
episodes.
The weird thing is, though, I know we curse ourselves by saying this all the time, but I don't think we're going to have that much to talk about.
I don't think so either. I mean, the biggest thing was that, and I don't think I wouldn't. I don't recommend this to any of our listeners unless they happen to be fans of the One Chicago universe. But Josh and I both felt like in order to talk about this episode, we had to watch the not one, but two Chicagoland episodes that feed into it.
I will say that every time we're forced to watch an episode of Chicago Fire, I can at least kind of get it.
Dude, I have notes about this. Like,
yeah.
There's an alternate reality where, like,
if Chicago PD wasn't part of One Chicago, I might watch One Chicago.
I might. I've never seen
Chicago
Med.
PD's part of it, but fuck that. Chicago Med's a little weird, but like, it's okay.
But still, it's like I could see myself. You know, I'm like I'm doing some weird job where like I just like post shit on eBay all day long, and I like you know, so every 2 days I'm going to the post office, but most of my time I'm sitting there, I'm boxing stuff, I'm making little notes. I could totally have.
Absolutely.
Chicago FD in the background.
Yeah, Chicago Fire, I think. I mean, like, you know, we drop into an episode and you're just like, I don't understand. Who are these people?
Why are they getting pies in the mail?
Yeah, why are these people getting pies?
But it's charming. It's lovely. It's sweet. You know, they say there's like, it's like sweet banter in the firehouse mixed with
I mean, you know? I keep waiting for Steve from Sex and the City to tell people to fucking voluntarily amputate part of their legs, but
absolutely.
Like,
other but he's than there. That. Yeah. But anyways, so we watched an episode called Daydream Believer. It's season 16, episode 20. It is the third in a three-part saga. Well, it's much many more parts than that. I didn't count how many parts are actually in the whole Greg Yates saga in total, but it is the opening salvo in the Greg Yates epic. And it starts in Chicago Fire, transitions to Chicago PD, and then finds its conclusion in an episode of SVU, but only in name only.
And if you are like a completist, the episodes that you would have to watch are season 3, episode 21 of Chicago Fire. Mm-hmm. We called her Jelly Bean.
Yeah. Which you'll be so confused at the first scene of this.
Yeah. I mean, they give you a, you know, on the last Chicago Fire or whatever. It doesn't help. So we called her Jelly Bean, season 3, episode 21 of Chicago Fire. Uh-huh. Then that leads into season 2, episode 20 of The Number of Rats. Mm-hmm. From Chicago PD.
Yeah.
And then that leads into this episode.
Yes. And then there's someday we'll count up all the episodes in the Greg Yates mega story, but we haven't watched them all yet. So
yeah, there's at least six.
There's at least one more Chicago crossover episode involving.
Yeah.
Greg
I think
Yates.
There are nine in total, but
yeah,
cause that's Amaro gets shot in that one, doesn't he? Or Dodds does. Dodds does. Dodds gets shot in that one.
Okay, right on. So, oh, that's when Dodds
the
has
first
to
time.
Take him. Yeah, it's the first time getting shot. So, my recap will briefly touch on what happens in those two Chicago episodes, but mostly I'm focused on this one. So, without further ado, Josh, you drinking anything?
Oh, yeah. I finished just now the Toppling Goliath King Sue. I had a four-pack of tall boys of those that I just finished off. That's a double hazy IPA. Mm. It's got a 100 rating on Beer Advocate. Mm. And then I'm moving on to, in the Old Faithful, Tony's on the
Tony's
pier
on
glass.
The pier, man. Yeah.
It fits our very large ice cubes better than my normal Gibson.
Are you an upstairs man or a downstairs man when you're at Tony's?
You know, I like them both, honestly.
So do I. Yeah, so downstairs
because
you really
downstairs
feel like
has
you're...
the fires, the fireplaces.
Yeah, but it's also got the kind of sumptuous decor that really makes you feel
that
like
feels
you're...
more like you're in a Rockford Files
episode. Exactly.
Which is my goal anytime I go anywhere in Los Angeles.
Like you are about to be the witness to a crime in Columbo, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I love downstairs at Tony's on the Pier.
Upstairs
is, has its charms. It's a much better view of everything.
It's legendary
because it's panoramic.
Yes, it is glass in all directions.
It's glorious. I swear every time I'm drinking from this glass, we're gonna talk about Tony's on the Pier, and I don't think either one of us has the gumption to fucking cut that shit out of the episode, because Tony's on the Pier is legendary.
Yeah, it might be the best bar
maybe, you know, in the country.
I decided to not get another beer right now because I want to keep my wits.
Oh, but
about
yeah, I have
me.
A bullet rye in that glass.
Nice. Yeah. I switched to a LaCroix. It's an apricot LaCroix because I went to C-Town, which is the grocery store that's closest to me. It's like a real grocery store, and they did not have any normal flavors.
I had a very lewd suggestion as to what C-Town could stand for, but I'll leave that up to the viewer to decide where I was going.
But I was,
you
I
know
was
where I was going.
I was between apricot and peach pear, so very random selection there. They had
neither
coconut
of them
also.
Can have coconut tastes like shampoo. Fuck that.
I don't like the coconut.
The coconut,
I like coconut
is,
water. I do not like.
But
coconut
the coconut
LaCroix.
LaCroix is repugnant.
Not a fan.
How's
the apricot?
Though?
In the apricot, in its defense, it tastes like a fresh apricot, not like a dried apricot, but it does kind of have an artificial.
Because a dried one tastes like
to it, kind of, but like good taint,
but still taint.
Anyways, a woman is found raped and burned, eventually to death, in Chicago. This brings in Hank Voigt and company, who learn that the case closely matches an unsolved case from New York, which gets first Benson and then Amaro and Tutuola on flights to the Chi. The suspect is a middle-aged white guy wearing scrubs, and wouldn't you know, it turns out to be our old friend Dr. Gregory Yates. Being much, much smarter than our friends at the Chicago PD Intelligence Unit, Yates grabs Nadia, a former drug-addled sex worker turned cop intern, and hits the road. Voigt, Lindsay, and Halstead are arguing in their squad room about how Yates could have so easily eluded their dragnet and stolen Lindsay's car when they realize that Nadia isn't in the office. Halstead admits that she'd left to go grab a birthday cake for Detective Lindsay, but the ominous music swell and Voigt's sudden outburst at a file cabinet tell us that all is probably not well. Somewhere in Indiana, Yates is speeding down an interstate in the rain, singing along with a below-replacement-level cover of the Monkees' Daydream Believer.
It's so bad that it's, like, unintelligible. You cannot figure out what cover this is. It's not Anne Murray, I tell you what.
No, it was definitely, like, they hired somebody for this. Sorry. Well, Nadia fights to free herself from her restraints inside a green plastic tarp in the back of the silver sedan. He exits to pick up some typically Yatesian supplies, including bleach, lighter fluid, wire cutters, rope, and some other weird stuff. And he thoughtfully helps a young mother with her shopping basket whilst perusing the selection of green nail polishes, his post-mortem trademark.
I think that's pre-mortem, actually, but...
Oh, I you know, do we ever see him polishing a woman?
We don't see him polishing a woman, but I think it's pre. I think it's pre, not post.
Okay. Well, right,
I don't think he would get. I don't think he'd get off as much if it was post.
Oh, that's right. He doesn't get off. He's not like Rudnick. He doesn't get off on their dead bodies. He likes some people. Yeah. He likes their fear. Yeah. Yikes. Back in the car, Yates is incensed at Nadia because her kicking and squirming was noticed by a trucker in the parking lot. He then tells Nadia that they're heading to New York. The Chicagos find Nadia's car with a smashed birthday cake next to it, and then a car is found with Lindsay's license plate. About 1,400 Chicago cops all draw their weapons at once on a poor family inside the car as we learn that Yates switched license plates to foil the detectives once again. The driver tells Voigt the last place he stopped was outside Elkhart, Indiana. Another set of plates was switched in Pennsylvania, which can only mean Yates is on his way back to his old home, NYC. All the SVUs plus Voigt, Lindsay, and Halstead hop on over to New York while Yates tells Nadia how she will soon beg for her life. She spits on him and tells Yates that Voigt will make him pay. He then slaps her and stuffs her in the back of the trunk. Rollins finds that a stolen credit card was used to buy gas, a shovel, and an ice pick in Plainfield, New Jersey, so Yates must be getting close. Soon after the Chicagoans arrive in town, a sanitation truck spots Lindsay's car parked in an abandoned shipyard in Inwood. Since the doors are locked, Voigt, a rebel who doesn't care about evidence, smashes a window to get inside. Nadia is gone, but a scarf given to her by Detective Lindsay was found inside, which means she was once in there. In Queens, Yates follows a dark-haired younger woman to her apartment door and offers to carry her heavy luggage inside. Upstairs, the woman walks into her apartment to find the place ransacked with another woman lying dead on the floor. She screams. Yates knocks her out and then goes into some kind of orgasmic fugue state. Yep. The SVUs find a witness, but are still one or two steps behind the madman who we next see trailing a familiar to us woman down a sidewalk. Carisi finds that Yates had a parking ticket just around the corner a few years ago, so this must be a stomping ground of sorts. A neighborhood canvas bears fruit as a witness spotted Yates follow a woman into a nice semi-detached home. SWAT takes the door down to find Yates enjoying some kind of toast at the dining room table with new fiancée Susie Frain. Yates is hauled downtown for questioning while Susie is super confused as to why Chicago cops are manhandling her nice boy Greg in Queens. In interrogation, Yates tells Rollins and Halstead that Nadia offered to give him a ride, but that he hasn't seen her since he got to New York. Yates hypothesizes that Nadia was probably taken by an abductor to some out-of-the-way special place where she could be quietly killed and where the killer could visit her corpse every now and then just for fun.
That's an air quote around hypothesizes, by the way.
Across the hall, Frain tells Amaro and Lindsay that she's been dating Yates on and off for 19 years. Amaro Scherzer, evidence of the many, many women her guy has tortured and killed over the years. However, no matter how much proof they show her, Susie refuses to turn on her Greg.
She dumbest does, person ever?
She does, however, say that Greg had been at the beach at that time that the detectives believe Yates would have been murdering Nadia. He told Susie he went to Orchard Beach in the Bronx to meditate before deciding to ask her to marry him. A sweep of the beach yields nothing, but the dunes beyond yield multiple bodies, including Nadia's. Sadly, there is still no concrete physical evidence linking Yates to the other victims besides Nadia, so that's where the case lies. At trial, Yates decides to represent himself, since he's the kind of smart, crazy guy that always represents himself in SVU. Yates attacks the character of Nadia by pointing out that she was a drug-abusing sex worker who likely fell back to her old ways. He also mentions that SVU and Chicago PD once thought Halstead's brother Will might have been a suspect, which means his own brother was maybe partially responsible for clearing a potential suspect's name. On the witness stand, Yates goes a little too far in describing how Sergeant Voight himself was brutally abusing Nadia, forcing his own attorney to cut him off. Then, while Warner
How does he
is
go
on
too
stand,
far there, Adam?
Then, while Warner is on the stand, Yates gets visibly turned on by Nadia's autopsy photos and by the medical examiner's description of her injuries.
And arguably audibly turned on.
Jesus Christ. Instead of objecting, Barbara lets Yates get very gross and descriptive, which has the desired effect of completely and totally shocking everyone in the courtroom.
And very gross and descriptive comes nowhere near.
I mean,
describing.
There will definitely be some audio clips pulled of that whole exchange.
But it's hard to, like, if ever you need to watch an episode to see what we're talking about, it's
yeah,
this.
It is. It is very gross.
I mean, I will absolutely give props where props are due. Dallas Roberts.
I mean, he's. It's a tour de force. It's a tour de force.
Very well.
A little too well, maybe.
I'm profoundly disturbed, but wow.
Yeah. So back to the recap.
You hear
Josh.
And see erections happening without his crotch being in the shot.
I know. It's amazing. It's fantastic. Fantastic work. I mean, his little eye flutter thing that he does, beautiful.
And the lower lip tremble. And he also like plays with his tongue, but the tongue stays in the mouth. Uh-huh. It's but you can see it. You can see it anyway. Sorry.
It's disgusting.
Digression. Go back to the recap.
Yeah, Yates is obviously found guilty of all counts and is held pending sentencing. The SVUs and the Chicagos hold an Irish wake in honor of Nadia. Voight sneaks into Yates' cell, puts him in a chokehold, and threatens to end his pathetic existence right now, but he would prefer for someone in prison to do to Yates what he had done to Nadia. And we are left with a, I think I need to duck out real quick and take 4 showers, Dick Wolf.
Like, does this even count as a rape horn?
It's extreme rape porn.
It's a prison rape threat, but also like prison rape and murder threat.
But it's a I
like,
took it
you,
as a rape
to, like,
before
do you need
murder.
To, like, extend? Do you need to extend the audio like that we did?
I'll chop like, and screw it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus! Like, this is the worst of all of them.
You know, obviously, like, we're not saying that Yates deserves sympathy in any way.
We're not pro-Yates rights.
However, the ease with which Voight slips into police brutality.
We'll get into that later.
It's pretty bad. Pretty bad. Josh, I guess, is it time to talk about some of these folks?
It is. Mercifully, we've talked about almost all of them.
Yeah.
So, in... Munch My Benson episode 84, What Happens in the Box Stays in the Box.
Yeah.
where we're discussing season 16, episode 7, Chicago Crossover. We talked about Sophia Bush, who's playing Detective Aaron Lindsay. We talked about Jason Begge, who's playing Sergeant Hank Voigt. And we talked about Jesse Lee Sofer, who's playing Detective Jay Halstead. In episode 126, Adam's Corpse Power Rankings, where we're discussing season 17, episode 1, Devil's Dissections. We talked about Dallas Roberts, who's playing Dr. Greg Gates, and Mary Bacon, who's playing Susie Frayne, his fiance.
Lover. Yeah.
We've also already talked about Marina Squarciati, who's playing Detective Kim Burgess. We talked about her and Munchman Benson, episode 86. How many times were her feet in that cum? We're discussing the season. No, I know. That episode's so bad. But where we're discussing season 12, episode 23, Delinquent, she was playing Amy Myers. I'm pretty sure it was her feet in that cum. And we've already talked about Jenna Stern, who's playing Judge Alana Barth. We talked about her and Munchma Benson, episode 75, Amaro Nips Out on a Gurney, where we're discussing season 16, episode 23, Surrendering Noah, where Judge Alana Barth caught a fucking bullet from Johnny D.
Yeah, that's right.
She also played ADA Kathleen Eastman in season 1. This is going to go pretty quick.
Yeah.
We've got Stella Maeve, who's playing Nadia Dakotas. She was born in Nyack, New York. She made her first appearance in a Dick Wolf show at 16 on the original series and Two Criminal Intents in 2005. She's this character in three SVUs and 18 Chicago PDs. She was in one more SVU when she was a teenager. She's been in the films Transamerica, Remember the Days, and that's Days spelled D-A-Z-E. Harold, Brooklyn's Finest, The Runaways, Starlet, which is really good, Butt Whistle.
Interesting.
Dark Summer. Let that butt whistle hang out.
Her name is Missy Blank Mange, which is quite a name.
At least it's just not. At least it's not Missy Blank Minge. Sorry. I apologize.
I think we know what the episode title is.
Dark Summer flipped Lost Nights, Short Mornings.
It's such a delightfully obscure euphemism, too. Nobody says minge anymore, right?
I know. You have to watch British shit. She was main cast in Golden Boy and The Magician. She's in, like, 65 episodes of The Magicians. That's what she ended up in after this. And it's a show that people watched. She had recurring roles in Gossip Girl, House, and Mayans MC. She has a child with actor Benjamin Wadsworth, with whom she's been engaged to since 2019. Then we've got Brian Garrity, who's playing Officer Sean Roman. He was born in Toms River, New Jersey, graduating from Toms River High School East. He started acting professionally in New York and then later moved to LA. He's in the films Jarhead, Art School Confidential, The Guardian, We Are Marshall, When a Stranger Calls, An American Crime, I Know Who Killed Me, which is a very, very weird fucking movie. Lindsay Lohan, The Hurt Locker, which is like, oh, wait, here's a good movie after I Know Who Killed Me. The Chameleon, which is based on the story that, The Imposter, the documentary The Imposter.
Yeah.
The Chameleon is the feature based on it.
Nice.
Open House, 10 Years, ATM, Flight, Refuge, Ask Backwards, Kilimanjaro, My Days of Mercy, and the standoff at Sparrow Creek. He was main cast in The Alienist, Briar Patch, The Fugitive, which was probably, 18th iteration of The Fugitive.
Seriously.
Big Sky, and 1923. He had recurring roles in True Blood, Boardwalk Empire, Ray Donovan, and Gaslit. He's also the counter boy who was shot in the foot by Christopher in season 1 of The Sopranos.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Episode 8, I think. He is Sean Roman in 60 episodes between this and the One Chicago universe. He's also in one episode of the original series and one episode of SVU as other characters. Next up, Jacqueline Hendy, who's playing Attorney Crane. Greg Yates is attorney here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who's very much backseated. We've seen her twice before as this character. We saw her in Wonderland Story and Gambler's Fallacy, yet we did not talk about her in either one.
No.
She's in six SVUs altogether as this character. She was in the films My Normal and Long Shot Louie. She had a recurring role as Vanessa Montez and Vanessa Montez Vega, because she apparently married someone whose last name was Vega, in One Life to Live. She also had a recurring role in The Black Donnellys. She's in one episode of the original series as well. It looks as though she is a realtor in West Orange, New Jersey now.
Oh, all right.
I mean, I think she still acts, but make that bank, you know?
Well, exactly. There's a certain point where...
Yeah, absolutely. You got to get a side hustle going.
Yeah.
Last one, Asia Ferrari, who's playing Nyla Green. That's the roommate who walks in Yates. She's born in Seattle to ballerina Soon Frary and California State High School wrestling champion Lee Levy.
I assume they're huge Dan fans. Steely Dan.
Oh, probably. Asia Ferrari was a three-sport athlete in high school, earning a full-ride scholarship as a heptathlete at San Diego State University, where a friend of the pod, Stewart, went for his graduate degree.
Yeah.
She was a D1 NCAA bronze medalist and All-American there. While still in college, she placed ninth at the U.S. Olympic trials in 2000. After college, she was accepted into the U.S. Olympic Training Center program, where she trained full-time and competed around the world. An injury sidelined her right before the 2004 Olympic trials. Shortly thereafter, she visited her father's family in New York, where she stayed. And shortly thereafter, became a stunt performer.
Wow. That's cool.
She has stunt doubled for Vanessa Williams, Genesis Rodriguez, Michelle Pfeiffer, Hilary Swank, Carla Gugino, Journey Smollett, Zoe Saldana, Megan Fox, Megan Good, Jennifer Lopez, Rosario Dawson, and Stephanie Beatrice. In a total of 141 shows and movies.
Wow.
She's done so much stunt work. Huge, huge fucking things. You look at her credits, it's kind of nuts. But yeah. she basically takes a slap from Greg Yates. She's been married to stunt coordinator and second unit director Philip Silvera since 2016.
Nice.
That's it. So, the cake errand nearly always ends in violence, right?
Unless you're in Chicago Fire, and then it would just be going out and getting some fucking cake, man.
No, that's pies. Pies and cakes are very different.
I'm sure there's a cake errand in... you know what? Actually, Josh, this reminds me of... This is an interesting tie-in.
Are we going to start a Chicago Fire Splinter podcast?
I'm considering it. But,
where we only talk about Chicago Fire and any time there's... We
crossover
just
episode. We don't watch PD. The crossover episodes.
Never.
So remember... So the DB that I had to call in where they dragged them... They drag the corpse. Sorry, the
dead body.
The floater.
Yeah.
That
you just said DB and people do not know what you're talking about.
The floating corpse that one of our Swan Boat rental customers saw.
I know of which you speak.
Alerted me to, which I called
in. The body that was dragged onto the dock.
Dragged
by the cops
onto the rental dock. And left there. I'm sitting in the closest possible spot to the rental dock, while I'm writing emails and answering the phone, looking at the smashed face of a reasonably
fresh
corpse.
While Pike is yelling at the cops to get this fucking corpse off the dock.
Yeah. So while I'm dealing with the initial situation, which is a situation you have to figure out what you're going to do and what you're going to tell them and all this Pike is off running a fucking cake errand, Josh.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that.
He was driving all over Austin trying to buy a fucking cake.
Yeah, he had to go get a cake for the night.
And he shows up hot. If he had showed up 10 minutes later, they would have not have let him in. It just would have been me answering phones and setting up all the boats. Right. As it was fine because I could set up all the shit. I just couldn't leave the dock. But Pike is all yelling at them like, we're not going to rent stand-up paddle boards. It's like... Pike, this is my dream. I don't want to rent stand-up paddle boards.
No one wants to rent anything that someone's coming down to rent.
Like, we have a rental guy who's going to spend an hour scrubbing the corpse juice off the dock, which he did.
He did.
Anyways, digression for the munchies, but I just remembered that was a cake, Aaron, that ended in death.
Or it didn't end in death, but death was involved.
Death was afoot.
Death was heavily in the mix. All right, so do we have any... Neither of us could figure out where this Daydream Believer cover is coming from, right?
No, I it's for, not for, a discernible
for Greg
cover.
For Yates to be singing along to this cover a real cover... is like, that's probably the most disturbing thing about Greg Yates.
I suppose the rights to this are a lot cheaper than the actual the rights to a real song, but they're not, it can't be that cheap, right?
It's still a famous song. Fucking episode this.
It's still a famous song. You're still paying.
The other thing, the other thing about the famous song is that it's not like a fucking person who was in the Monkees wrote it. That single mother in the gas station really should have been able to pick out a basket of murder supplies.
Right. I mean, you look at it and you go like, oh yeah, that you're using those to cut somebody's fingers off, right? While you're torturing them to death. Jesus Christ.
It has to be said that we get to the, and I'm not exaggerating here.
I mean, it's like, it's the grossest shopping trip since William Lewis went shopping. As far as
or since Laura Hall went to Breed and Company,
with Robert Durst went to Chalmers, you know.
Okay, we get to the 7:30 mark before we see an SVU cast member outside of the recap and credits. Mm-hmm. This is not an SVU episode.
Benson sitting in her office receiving a phone call from
Hank Voight.
Which is telling her that Finn and Amaro are going to be on a plane back to New York.
Yeah, but they're not in the first scene anyway.
No. And why is Hank Voight telling her this?
Now, right before the credits, they hear that the plates were switched in Elkhart, Indiana. Mm. Hank Voight says, "Oh my God." But is that the most unintentionally hilarious Elkhart slam that you've ever heard? Elkhart. Oh my God.
Have you spent much time in Elkhart?
I've driven through it.
Yeah, if I have driven through it, it was when I was very young, so I have no formed memories, but
I mean, for you and me, that would be Gillette. Oh my God.
Gillette. Anything but Gillette.
It's so stupid. It's like when he says that, it's like, oh yeah, let's shit all over Gillette or Elkhart, whatever. Yeah. Let's shit all over Elkhart. By the way, Nadia Dakotas wasn't originally intended to die here.
Mm, really? Interesting.
There's an article like, I read it, but I don't care. I'm not going to cite it.
So Rollins says that she found a credit card from like a gas station in Plainfield, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Where he'd purchased gas and something else.
And murder supplies.
And ice picks. What gas station sells ice picks, Josh? When have you ever been to a store that sells ice picks? Besides like a kitchen supply store.
Oh, and a...
and a murder store. a Greg and a, Yates and a murder
basic,
store.
Basic Instinct. Yeah. Basic Instinct fan store sells ice picks too.
Also, Yates got a lot of murder supplies at a gas station. Because it looks like when he's in
sorry,
it, it's
but
like...
That's fucking... William Lewis would have gone to a convenient... or
you would have gone to a hardware store. Those were hardware store things. Like at Walmart, absolutely. Yeah. You could get all those murder supplies. Plus a disgusting shade of green nail polish.
And literally everyone at Walmart is buying that shit.
Exactly. At They're Walmart, nobody is looking askance at you for any of those purchases. Like,
it, honestly, if you went through the fucking checkout at Walmart without murder supplies, that's where the red
people
flag
would be
confused.
Raised. Like,
fuck you, Sam Walton.
Yeah.
So Nadia's last words to the viewers are, if you kill me, Hank Boyd is going to track you down and make you wish you'd never been born. And then she spits in his face. Mm-hmm. Quickly thereafter, they get the news that the car has been found at an abandoned shipyard or something mm-hmm. like that, yeah. south of the Broadway Bridge. Mm-hmm. When they get to the car, Lindsay, who is apparently an optimist, a cockeyed optimist, mm-hmm. if you will, when that whatchamacallit's turned up. That scarf.
Oh, the scarf. Uh-huh.
Yeah, she says, so she could still be alive.
Yeah, exactly. She's letting us know to find her. It's like, no. Yeah, she's... Do you know what this guy does to people?
Yeah, have you not seen the pictures that Amaro's about to show fucking Susie Frayne?
Don't you know what happens to Susie Frayne? I guess he didn't do that, but still. He didn't do that.
That's the...
his mentor did that.
no, his mentee.
No, I thought Rudnick was
the other way
around. Oh, you're right. It was the other way around. Now, quick little quibble that I have, and I think this came up slightly before this, but they say it twice, mm-hmm. is in describing Yates, I think Liv says it once, and then Finn says it later. Instead of describing him as a 40-something white male, which is pretty standard cop talk, right?
Yeah.
They describe him as a male white, which is a very strange way to say something. So a white, not a white guy or a white man.
I feel like they just should have said honky bro.
I know, but it's, I just find it a very strange way to say that.
It's an odd
like, way to say if they said a black, you know, it'd be like, ooh, I don't know. I don't know if you could, I don't know if you should say that. Like,
I think you shouldn't have said that.
No, I don't feel comfortable saying that.
I know. I hear you. He is going nuts here.
Yates?
Yeah, because he goes straight from fucking killing Nadia to, like, killing a flight attendant that he, like, follows into her apartment.
Which is, it happens so fast that it's very difficult to even tell what the fuck is going on in this scene. No, like, it's like, how did he kill this other person before he even got
inside?
That's because
your perception of all things has been thrown off by his, I just brain damaged a girl after I killed another mm-hmm. face.
Oh, but afterwards. So before I'm going like,
But that's broken you. The O face has like broken everything for like 3 minutes on either side. Because you see him come.
Do you think that was in the script or is that?
No, that's him.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
A very specific and awful thing, but he is a genius. You know, one thing I like, and I can't remember which one it was. I think it was in the Chicago PD episode, is having Yates like stay with the on-brand messaging.
Yates is not in Chicago Fire at all. He's just in
Chicago Fire. Episode. However, but in the Chicago PD episode, he talks about going to Chicago. Oh, I go to Chicago Med all the time. I eat lunch there. And I think you can break the branding, right? Like, yeah. I go to the hospital and eat lunch. When you have this disgusting, horrifying monster, like, saying it. You can tone down the, you know, cross-brand synergism when it's Yates talking, right?
Nope. You gotta keep it.
I need to go backwards just slightly because...
Then I'll go forwards.
I have a huge problem in that shipyard scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking Camry, Josh.
Yep.
That is, at this point, the sum total of evidence that they have in this extremely important, high-profile, time-sensitive case.
And none of these cops have a Slim Jim?
Dude, it's not hard. Like, all you need is a coat hanger and something to wedge. Like, do you have...
Yeah, it's a late model Camry. Or it's a like, it's not a new Camry either.
You know? Are you this fucking like a, cops? Do you have a goddamn crowbar? Somewhere you bend the door frame slightly and you stick something in there. It doesn't even have to be a real Slim Jim. Like, it's easy. I just had a big problem with that because you're fucking cops, man. Like, you have to have a chain of evidence and it's like, mm-hmm. you don't know which hair, which fiber is going to be the thing that breaks the case.
Sure.
Until after you've done that.
Right, right, right.
And so just like smashing a window, mm-hmm. it seems like a beggy move, not a live move. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Killers always fuck up by going back to where they were issued parking tickets.
Yeah.
I'm also getting fairly drunk at this point.
Yeah, so. That's great. We see Susie Frayne for the first time in the universe. Of course, we've seen her for the last time.
Yeah, we saw her time in the universe end.
But it is.
But not before getting filled out like an application in a fucking trailer at a prison.
But I do love how we're introduced to her because we think, oh, man. Yeah. Next victim, Susie Frayne walking down the street with some.
Nope, she's much flowers. Dumber.
I was really trying to get a sense of what her lunch spread was. It looked to be primarily toast.
I wish I'd seen it.
It was like a lot of toast with like there's something on the plates that I couldn't place. That was the
oh fuck, I've got three calls tonight. Yeah. That was where I was in that part of the episode. So I did not clock what was on the tent on the lunch table.
I spent about a solid 10 minutes looking at that and I was like, what are you doing, man? Keep going. So then they both get hauled in, you know, in for questioning.
Sure, and Hank obviously doesn't like it when perps aren't getting roughed up in interrogation, so he tries to send in fucking Halstead.
Yeah.
But Halstead does fuck all in there.
He doesn't, because, like, Rollins is talking to him. Rollins has, as we learn, Rollins has a special
Rollins
relationship.
Rollins is like a professional investigator.
She is, but she also has a special relationship with Greg Yates.
Or a professional interrogator. Uh-huh. I think this is, like, where Rollins generally shines.
Oh, she's great. Yeah, she's great at this and at like sitting behind the computer and breaking the case completely randomly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Deus Ex Rollins.
I was just noticing how this is the rare episode as of late where Rollins is not pregnant. And of course,
we've had a lot of pregnant Rollins episodes.
Yeah, a lot recently. That's the randomizer. But also, in the case of the Yates episode that we've seen already, he quite memorably
smells the juice able pregnancy.
To smell her pregnancy.
He is disgusting.
And I think he did the old eye flutter, lip quiver.
The O face. It was all gross. All gross. Yeah, he came.
It seems like bad criminal mastermind tradecraft to basically tell the police all the details in your MO that they don't know about yet.
Yeah, sure. Also, it seems like bad tradecraft to come up with a cross-country road trip story that's as preposterous as the Nadia just wanted to get out of town and looked at me like I was a father figure. Like, motherfucker.
No one's looking at you like that.
No one's looking at you like that.
Yeah. If you have kids, they're not looking at you like that.
No, because they've seen your O face.
Everybody has.
Everyone has. It's disturbing.
Horrifying.
I just can't get over how dumb Susie is. Because we also obviously later find out that she knew Rudnick, too.
Yeah.
And thought that nothing was wrong with either one of them. So they're not only eccentrics. Was she blinded by love, she wasn't in love with
Rudnick. The social scene in Elmhurst, you know, you don't get to meet very engaging personalities out there.
I feel like they're gonna have to establish that the social scene in Elmhurst is that bad a lot better. For us to just take that at face value. His burial grounds are pretty much pulled from Long Island serial killer, obviously. That's not at Pelham Bay. That's more on the south side.
That's long further Long out Island. On Long Island, but
Long Island and on the south side.
But yeah, this is Orchard Beach, which is like a kind of man-made beach that's next to Pelham Bay Park in the Bronx, which is apparently people like going there, but it's much easier for me to go to a better beach, so I go there.
But Pelham Bay is very much like they shot this at Orchard Beach, but it is not at Orchard Beach. This is supposed to be Pelham Bay.
That is where Orchard Beach is. They're
Pelham Bay is in the Bronx, though.
Yeah, that's Orchard Beach. Is part of Pelham Bay Park.
I thought this was actually shot down at.
That was clearly shot at Rockaway. This one was not necessarily shot there. Okay. There was no. It one couldn't tell. There was a weird building in the background that he wouldn't be burying bodies there because there's a building like right behind him. And it's just like you can like tighten the depth of field so that like it's out of focus, but I can still see that there's a large building right there, you know, even if it's soft.
Now when Yates goes to the beach to reminisce, does he listen to Neil Young, Rupert Holmes, or Ruggiera?
I think of him more as like a Christopher Cross guy, man. He's sitting there. He's not like his toes are in the sand, but his eyes are on the horizon looking at those sailboats.
Is he listening to the theme from Arthur, or what's he listening to? Is he just listening to sailing?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that listens to sailing on repeat, man.
Okay.
That's why he's so smooth, you know?
Sure. But like, does he walk through the dunes and like maybe this is all because of the relationship that went wrong?
You know what? Good point, man.
I bet it's Rupert Holmes.
Yeah, good point. Because
I mean, it's not the cape. We get that.
No, and I couldn't see him at a bar called O'Malley's, but somebody's planning their escape from him. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, and it's not Susie Frain because she does not know what's going on. So then we get the "oh God, he's going to defend himself" bullshit.
Yeah, I find it incredibly tiresome.
I do, generally.
I mean, I like everything that Yates does in this courtroom scene. I will say that the courtroom scene is my favorite part of the whole saga. Uh-huh.
But that's mostly because there's nothing else that happens in this episode.
Yeah.
So Voight is like kind of irritated immediately that Barba is unable to like.
He's resting bitch face. He does.
He's also a sergeant. Has he been in a fucking courtroom? That's like what the fuck is going on here? The legal system, the court.
It's always
the courts in Chicago are not any different from New York.
It's always the legal system or like procedures or these other things are that's the bad guy. The reason I can't stop crime in Chicago is because of the legal system. Gotta break it to you, buddy. Nope, that's not why.
That's not why.
Capitalism, racism, white supremacy.
Yeah, all of those. Yeah. So Benson's on the stand getting cross-examined by Yates, and he starts asking about Halstead.
Dr. Halstead.
And it's like,
Dr.
Will Halstead. Yeah. He's a main character on Chicago Med, but at this point he was an introduction to the universe. Mm-hmm. His hair gets increasingly weird.
Yates is
because Chicago. No.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Josh, you really are trying to backdoor in a Chicago Universe podcast.
I don't want to do Chicago. The only one that I'm like, I could see a world in which I watch Chicago Fire. I don't want to do it unless I'm doing it for a podcast.
There's no like trial by Chicago, is there? Oh, Chicago Justice. That's what it's called, obviously.
Yeah, and that died because Peter Stone. But okay, so they're talking about Will Halstead, and he's trying to, you know, basically introduce a plausible other person who would have done it.
So doubt, reasonable doubt.
But how does Benson not say that Yates also knew the victim that is in question here?
I mean.
Like, it seems like that is still within the purview of the original question that's asked and that she's not adding stuff. And if not, then how is Barba not redirecting
that? On the Benson's bad at being on the stand bedpost, Josh, because it's just time and time again.
And I mean, it's not like it's just her. Like, it's obviously like a recurring theme of cops. Oh, I can't believe, I can't believe I fucking failed the case on the stand, whatever. Like, because it happens to Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is she on the stand? I don't even remember.
I'm glad I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
I only care about the scenes where Warner and or Yates are on the stand.
Yes. All right. So when Yates is on the stand and starts feeding his line of bullshit, Barba's incredulity at his story is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, Barba slays these scenes.
Yeah, Barba's so good.
And he's not really given that much to
work with. No, he's given very little.
He's fucking brilliant. Yeah.
He is. He's given very little. Thank you, Raul Esparza, for brightening up this slog.
We don't often get to talk about main cast members just like laying waste to a script, but he fucking kills every scene he's in.
Yeah, I mean, because does Amaro has a little scene. Does Finn have anything in this one? I know he did in the Chicago PD episode, but does he have
anything? He has nothing in this one. Right? It's all in the Chicago PD episode. Yeah. And he's fun in the Chicago PD episode.
But like Amaro and Rollins.
We should probably establish that like this aired without credits for the whole thing. It was just a 3-hour block of TV. Yeah. There wasn't any of the credits or recaps or any bullshit. Like it was like the premiere event this year happened.
Yeah. But like Amaro and Rollins had small parts, and
Rollins had quite a bit to do.
Yeah,
I think they basically like worked out to where like the SVU cast were going to get their normal week's worth of work in.
Yeah,
and it was either going to happen in the Chicago PD episode or it was going to happen in this. And so Carisi and Rollins were much more involved in this one, and Amaro and Finn were in the Chicago PD episode.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's probably just like a contractual balancing of the books.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. Still, I did think that Barba was the one standout main cast member for sure.
Oh yeah.
But that whole scene gets fun because it really builds to a climax.
To a climax.
More than one?
Yeah. I mean, Yates creams his jeans when talking about the fake Voight rape shit. Like, you see him come.
Dr. Yates, your questions?
Yes. Yes, Doctor, could Miss Dakotis' injuries have been caused by her prostitution?
It's unlikely. She was savaged.
Savaged? You say, how so?
In addition to the blunt trauma and strangulation, there were cuts on her nipples and external genitalia.
And her anal sphincter, was that torn?
Yes, it was.
And these injuries, though not fatal, they would have been painful.
Very. She died a slow death.
How long did she survive after the first attack started?
30 minutes, maybe longer.
And she would have been in agony all through it?
Mr. Barber, not to put words in your mouth, but I'm willing to entertain an objection if you have one.
I'm fine, Your Honor.
Barba's coup de grace is, let's have the jury hear Yates get an erection.
we're hearing his suit pants rip.
Yeah.
There is so, wool or silk that can contain whatever was going on down there.
The moment he utters the words torn anal sphincter, you know his dick like tears out of his pants. Like it is out. When he says, may I examine those photos? And then you're like, oh, I can't. I came. That, like,
he comes.
He even fondles like the photo. You see his finger, like his finger
his
sort of like fondling.
His refractory period is short because.
Yeah, microscopic. He comes like 15 times.
Oh, God. And wow. I keep wanting to call him Dallas Braden.
I get it. I've actually almost called him that once before. It was the time before I almost called him Dallas Braden. I really did. And then he's like, stay off my mound.
He had a perfect game, right? One of the weirdest perfect games of all time. Or did he just have a no-hitter?
I just remember him telling A-Rod to get the fuck off his mound.
Dallas Roberts, apologize. Fantastic.
Did not throw a perfect game.
No, but he,
or a no hitter.
I mean, this courtroom scene is as close as it gets. At least in the greater Chicago universe, this is.
So, how long do you think the jury deliberated?
I just want to know what the like
3 minutes. Did you see him come? Did you see him come? Did you see him come? Okay,
like. It was dripping down his leg.
Yeah. No, there's a pool of Ejac on his shoe. There's so many possible names for this episode.
Which one will Apple let us post?
Yeah. Yeah. What is the slightly least lewd? So then we get a cheers and then a bizarre cut to the courthouse holding cell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my main question here is, how does Voight have the suction to even get in here?
Oh, because he's a legend. They all
no one in New York knows who Hank Voight is.
Of course not. But every prison corrections officer knows about his crimes, and they're like, oh yeah, this guy wants to rough up a prisoner. Let's do it. Let's throw
this guy out. Assaulted Sophia Bush on set. Let's give him this scene.
Yeah, you know, I have nothing bad to say about her besides the fact that whatever they wrote for her character in this, but she seems like a fine actress every time I've seen her in anything.
Agreed. I could absolutely watch a cop show where she's
the If it was lead. Sophia Bush and Elias Koteas, and that was your
Yeah, and he's always wearing a fucking cockeye hat.
Something. Like, always wearing some kind of weird hat. Who knows? I could maybe watch that show, but
I can't do this baggy shit. I can't do
the Voight Halstead show. No. No, man. Not
but Halstead like is a non he's not a thing.
But he's always there. Every time yeah, I he's see always he's there, always but there.
Like he's always there because we've seen two episodes. You and I have seen two episodes of Chicago PD.
It feels like a lot more than that.
It feels like 50. I know.
Okay, so Beggy walks in. Let's wrap this up. We're almost done.
He puts him in a chokehold and then tells him that he's gonna not snap his neck.
But because
he's gonna wait for someone in prison to do it.
Well, to...
And do more. To do what he did to Nadia Dakotas.
Can you get those torture implements in prison easily? Can you get, like, wire cutters and lots of rope and other...
I'm pretty sure if you told a CO what you were doing and who you're doing it to, you could get it.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'll get smuggled in a cake or something, right?
Or up someone's ass.
Why not both?
On that note,
guys, we rank these episodes each and every week. We rank on our own nearly patented 4 criteria 10-point scale,
patent pending.
We rank on the overall quality of the episode, the quality of the guests therein, how problematic the episode was, and the depth and breadth of lives ruined. Now, as much as it's going to pain me to say this, I do feel like this ticks maybe 2.5 boxes. And so we're going to have to look that in the face. Now, I guess let's start at the top.
We're going to have to look it square in the eyes as we're
as it's like
as eyes it's are pegging us rolling. As it's pegging us
face to face pegging. Oh, it's your favorite foreign movie, Josh.
F2FP.
So let's talk about the overall quality of this episode. Was it an SVU episode?
Arguably.
Did I feel like precious minutes of my life were stolen from me trying to figure out why the Chicago Fire cast members were sniffing cold pies so lasciviously? That was the biggest problem I had with that episode. They were taking pies out of like a cold case and sniffing them. Uh-huh. You don't sniff cold pies. You sniff warm pies. Everybody knows this. What are you sniffing on a cold pie?
Your mom sniffed. your mom sniffs cold pies.
It's you stumbled on it, but I appreciate the effort. I like where you're going there.
I know. I've been drinking too much. Let me give you a clean one. Your mom sniffs cold pies. I can't do it.
Brilliant. Love it.
Your mom sniffs cold pies.
So in that regard, right, as pleasant as fire might be, as brutal and grim as PD might be. I didn't really want to spend 2 hours watching One Chicago, whenever that was yesterday.
Yeah.
2 days ago at this point.
I don't know, 50 years ago.
So it's knocking it down for me, man. I don't see how this cracks a 2 for me in this category, especially because I know what the other categories are going to be.
No, I'm fine with that.
Because it's just like, it's
I hear you.
It's careening also, right? Like, it doesn't have a real plot. It's just, it's all plot, but without having one.
As far as we're concerned, watching an SVU episode, we're basically watching like 10 minutes worth of plot fleshed out to 42 minutes.
Yeah, we're watching the third act, and in the third act of a...
Third and fourth acts, but
Yeah, but in a like typical SVU, we're watching like maybe courtroom or maybe the like big, you know, showdown at the end. And that takes place, that's like 10 minutes, right? Not 50.
My only I hear your 2 point.
Uh-huh.
I think it's got to be at least a 3 because of Barba.
You're right. Barba was quite
because good. There's no other way. There's no other way.
We don't have another place to that. Reward.
He's acting. He clearly bumps.
Yeah, you're right. I accept that because
he is so good in this episode.
Quality is where we put main cast performances.
Right.
And like Rollins is fine, but I don't think she tips the scales any direction because she's no.
The only one tipping a scale in direction is Barba.
Yeah, that's fine.
But he does it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I agree with that. Now, guests, this is maybe, I think, the most contentious one because you have Dallas Roberts doing things that really...
Next level.
Shouldn't be done, but I'm also like, wow.
Fully on board with, Like he's
you going nailed for that. No, like I, you might need therapy after this. Like,
absolutely.
you're gonna have trouble sleeping at night after what you just did on set today. But then you also have Halstead and fucking Voight. You know.
Again, I think you're knocking Halstead by proxy.
Well, okay.
I think it's all Voight. Halstead's not doing anything.
I don't... Well, that's a problem for this category, I think. Because he has the screen time to do something, but he's not doing anything.
But he's not given anything to do.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to be like their... He's like the Green Lantern of their little Avengers squad, right? X-Men, whatever you call them. You know, like the square guy. He's the square guy who shoots lasers out of his face.
Green Lantern's DC... the other things you were saying are Marvel, so he'd have to be in, I don't know, Justice League or something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. anyways, well, throw out a number for me then, Josh, or argue in one direction or another, because I don't think that like Nadia doesn't. She just gets to be in a tarp for 2 scenes. That's all we see her in this.
Sure,
she doesn't get to do very much.
Yeah, because we only get to look at this episode.
Mm-hmm. So really, we're talking about the Chicagoans.
But.
Susie Frayne.
I don't even care about Susie Frayne.
Uh-huh.
Dallas Roberts is in this episode a lot.
He's in it a lot. And
it's sublime.
That's why I was going to go there. Yeah.
It is. It's positively insane.
I have never been more certain in my life that I was about to hear the sound of cum dripping onto a courtroom floor as I was.
Or at least onto a leather shoe.
In not one, but 2 different scenes.
And maybe 5 times in 2 different scenes.
Yes. It's... And then in another, like 3 times in this episode.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Wow. We gotta unpack that.
I don't know how you circle this square.
Well, but then also, does that bleed into or drip into problematic, Josh? Because I don't know how we can talk about problematic without
those. I think there's
Dallas Roberts.
I think this is a fair compromise.
Uh-huh.
you know, I think it's – I don't think you can go below a 5 because of how fucking insane Dallas Roberts' performance is.
Yeah. I mean, that the episode works at all.
That is, that, is a testament to Dallas Roberts.
Exactly.
Entirely.
Exactly.
So I – okay. I'm fine with a 5 on guests because
– because the next one
– we're giving credit to Dallas Roberts' performance in the next one.
Yeah. We need to put an asterisk on this one because it's like –
yeah, because really it's a 7.5 yeah, between the two of them.
The guests is a balance. We're having like the way, the yeah. scales of sure. Chicago justice.
Yeah. The Peter Stone is sitting here like on his majestic. Yeah,
he's wearing a torn yoga and
yeah, and his delts are just screaming there. But if Peter Stone is sitting here like weighing things, it's a 5 for guests. But it's if it's 5 for guests, and it's a 10 for problematic, right?
I mean, it gets close to those heights just when he's singing to Daydream Believer. It's highly problematic. Yeah, I mean,
that's perverse.
Yes, and then
because this is a cover that no one knows.
I only watched the PD episode once, so I don't remember if we saw any of that. O face in the PD episode.
Oh,
see, I don't remember. And I just wonder, like, if they're just like trying to work through whatever scene they've. Let's say they shot the flight attendant scene first.
Sure.
And Warren Light's talking with the director, and they're like, I don't know. It's just like it's not working. We need something to tie it in. And then Roberts is like, wait, I got something for you. Let me show you this.
Hold on to your butts, guys. Hold on to your butts. I mean, we see him come 5 times.
How disturbed do you think the corpse extra was laying on the floor right below him while he's making that face?
Yeah, he came on her. He's method. She doesn't have many credits. She only has like 6 credits.
She was the
one he picked up on the street.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's why the timeline of that is all very confused for me. Anyway, so what do we call this? 8?
Is this No.
You're going 10. You're going all the way to 10.
I mean, okay, maybe we don't go 10, we go 9.
The only reason I wouldn't go 10 is just because I don't particularly like the episode. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, but I think it's a 9.
Yeah, but
I think it's hard to argue lower than a 9 if we're already penalizing the guests because Dallas Roberts is bringing.
I have 9 written in there right now, but I'm thinking about it, and I'm just thinking about, have we ever seen anything like this courtroom scene where a courtroom scene was the thing that was by far the most disgusting thing. Maybe ever. That I've ever seen in my life.
And okay, no. I think we have to go up to a 10. Yeah. Seriously, no. If you just think about how that scene with Warner plays out,
yes,
like Barba set it up. He's gotten him hard. He's fucking. He's worked his joint over here.
Barba's fluffed him, and now he's squirted
and then Barba extra, hands it off.
He squirted that warming lube on. Like,
yep.
No, and the scene where Barth,
it is Judge so Barth goes, foul.
Do you want to throw in an objection? Are you going to object?
No, I'm perfectly content back here, sitting in my chair, sitting back, watching the jury wonder, did this guy come?
Yeah,
he came. Did this guy came? Yeah. Oh, he definitely came. That all happens.
I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is when the bad mom, you know, like accuses her son of masturbating, like
jerking it in the door
while watching her fuck his friend. Yeah. And that
didn't happen.
Disturbing, but it was also fantastical. And also
fantastical in the literal sense of fantastical.
Exactly. Yeah. And also she wasn't like actually having an orgasm while she was describing it.
Well, we're not 100% sure.
Maybe later, but not anyways, okay.
But she didn't come 5 times.
But then the problem is that we're going to move on to Depth and Breadth of Lives Ruined. Because this one can't, I mean, like 2 people die during the course of this episode. Another is permanently brain damaged. At least 7
bodies found at the
beach. Exactly.
At least 7 bodies found.
At least 7 bodies found at the beach.
It's more later.
Yeah, we learn more. Yeah. In the next time we see him, we learn more. So it's got to be pretty high.
And there are the bodies in New Orleans and whatever.
Yeah, there's a whole stack of corpses on this guy.
10. We can't get out. We can't get around the 10.
And the fact that, like, Yates comes back time and time again. Mm-hmm. This is going to maybe twice. Have the biggest... it's a 7 is our composite score.
Which it has to be the most disparity between the overall quality of the episode.
Yeah.
And
could we have quality 3? I'm still... No. Can't do it. It's not that
Barb
bad.
Barb is just too good.
Well, Barb is good. So, like, okay, were we talking... It's not a 1, right? It's not a 1 being knocked to a 2. It's a 2 being knocked to a 3.
Yeah.
I'm afraid.
No, it's not a 1. It's not a 1.
It's not a 1. It's
we're mostly I honestly think that we're taking out or we're taking we've already
taken out points out of this episode.
No, I'm saying that we're penalizing the episode because we had to watch 2 other episodes that we didn't want to watch.
Well, but also I mean if you just want to look at it by itself, it's suffering from like third act syndrome, right? Like. And it's not.
You mean all third act syndrome?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like it doesn't really like it's all plot without having any arc, right?
Yeah.
So that's not its fault because it's part of this huge megasode.
Just wait until you get to the fucking season 24 premiere.
Jesus, we'll find out. Well, Josh, I think that means it's time to roll the next one and see what tomorrow will bring.
All right, so heading over to episode.lol, which was built for this podcast by friend of the pod, Flett, who co-created cinequote.net. Go there. It's your daily movie quote trivia game. The tape is spinning. Bill and Ted, not happy.
It's a rough night for them, too.
Oh, I hate that part.
And we've landed in episode 7 from season 14, Vanity's Bonfire.
Is that pronounced Vagina's Bonfire or
Vagina's Vagina's Bonfire. A baby kidnapped from a playground leads to a twisted case of lies, betrayal, and infidelity.
Let's see who we got in here. Ooh.
Big guests.
Huge stars,
as Mike Breen would say. Scott fucking Bakula.
Wow, man.
The goddamn quantum leaper himself, Sam.
Is he jumping to or from this body?
Probably into for this episode, but it's himself. Mm. We've got Jessica Hecht, who is a character actress who you would all recognize. Mm-hmm. We've got Bijou Phillips, the sexually abused daughter of the Phillips family. Mm. I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah.
We've got Luke Kirby, who I really like. He was he's in Rectify, and he was Lenny Bruce in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Mm. Yeah, it should be fun.
Nice. Well, that'll be interesting. You know, I feel like I haven't seen much Amaro in a while, so maybe we'll get a decent Amaro episode. I know he was in this last episode, but
he
briefly.
I will say that he was really good in the Chicago.
Yeah, he was. He was
PD episode.
He was. Good. He was doing the best work in the Chicago PD episode.
I absolutely agree. Mm-hmm. In Chicago PD, he was the best one. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about it at all, but
I was kind of like, I could watch. I want to watch the Amaro episode.
The number of rats. This. Yeah, I know. It's like, oh wait, this is charming Amaro. This is fun Amaro. Uh-huh. This is the Amaro who comes in and is like, oh no, I was gonna fucking steal your copier.
Yeah, not the Amaro who says, oh, I gotta run a quick errand.
I gotta
and I'm gonna drive
to
6 hours
beat
to
the shit out of
punch
my wife.
Some guy.
not romantic love interest.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, guys, on that note, I think it's time to mention some of the other things that you can enjoy. If you're sick of hearing ads on these, I highly recommend joining our Patreon. We have 2 levels. 1 gets you ad-free back catalog, all the episodes, even the ones we've taken off the public feed. For a little bit more, you get some cool benefits.
$2 a month, just $2. Yeah. It's the difference between $3 and $5 a month.
Exactly. So for $2 more, you get our movie club episodes. You also get these episodes a week early, uncut. This one right now, we're at a 106. So I am probably cutting 20, 30 minutes out of this one. Sometimes we cut 50 minutes. That is not out of the question.
I literally just cut more than 50 minutes out of the last edit.
And sometimes that's some of like the funniest stuff for us. Yes. I mean, it's like you'll hear us, you know, umming and aahing a lot more, and you'll hear some awkward pauses. But
you'll also hear like a fucking 10-minute story about me like bombing in a conversation with Dan Harmon.
Yeah, exactly. In most real life. One. In this one, I don't know. You might when I re-listen to it.
There's going to be a lot of talk about shit talking Chicago politics that's going to get cut sure.
So that stuff is all fun. Let's see. Also. Occasionally we'll do things that people can vote on. By the time this episode comes out, we will have already watched our March Munch film. We're letting the Munchies decide which film to watch. We have three or four. We haven't decided how many we're going to put on the poll.
We're definitely a three. We might add a fourth.
Yeah. We're going to let the listeners decide. Also, every 20th episode, we have a Munchies choice episode that we roll. The last two that we've done have been the very worst. Actually, the only two that we've done have been both the very worst episode we've ever done and tied for the very best episode we've ever done. To give you a sense, the Munchies are kind of they're thinking the same way we're thinking. We're happy for both of those choices.
They either want to torture us or they want to reward us.
Yeah, they're happy. We're happy with both of those choices. So that stuff's all tons of fun. Now we're on the socials at MuchMyBenson. All the socials are more or less kind of bleed together at this point. Not any of the short video ones, but Instagram, Facebook, Twitter posts. Someday, maybe if somebody decides to make it usable, Mastodon. We have
a Mastodon.
We do.
I'm not posting to it.
Yeah, we have merch. We have a Discord channel. It's a really fun place to discuss this stuff with other people. That's probably the best place to go if you want to talk.
Absolutely, the place you should be going if you want to talk about
that stuff. Can all either be found in the show notes to this episode or at our website, which is munchmybenson.com. You can also find our email address there. It's not surprisingly munchmybenson@gmail.com. I think that's everything. The theme is not very many other people are using the name Munch My Benson for anything. So
though they should be, because it's the best name ever.
Also, R.I.P. Munch. At this point, it's been a while since Belzer passed away, but
for us, it's been a week,
exactly,
and a half.
We miss you dearly. Indeed. Josh, I think it's time for us to get out there and start munching. It's time for me to go to bed.
Yeah. Yep. So when you munch, don't just grab a person off the street, make them throw their cake on the ground, and rape, torture, and kill them.
Don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of which gas stations along like the whatever I-78 corridor have 80, I think. Fucking, you know, torture materials in stock all the time. Yeah. Don't be that guy. Don't be the guy that knows that.
I'm not convinced that is possible though.
I mean, in Galveston, I know where to get that stuff, but that's Galveston.
Well, so that's normal. But that's because you're on all the Durst forums. Well, where can I get the bags to put the body parts to dump in the fucking bay?
Well, it was a bad choice. He should have weighted them down. He should have put them in crab traps. What he should have done, honestly. Mm-hmm. If you want me to know, then
crabs and pigs.
Get some blue crabs out of that. Also, in the end, them's good eating. All right, I'm ending this.
Yeah, on that. Your mom sniffs cold pies.
Guys, check this out.
Hey, what do we got here?
Mystery.
Oh, where from?
Doesn't say.
Well, who's it addressed to?
Just says 51.
Well, you gonna open it?
Well, as union rep, it seems I should do the honors.
Sure.
Good Lord. Blueberry crumble. Oh. Sweet potato.
Oh.
Mmm.
Oh my God.
Apple crisp.
Yeah.
Ah.
What's it say? To my 51 family, we'll go toe-to-toe with Dinkles any day of the week. Don't let Mouch Bogart the blueberry crumble. Love, Mills.